Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Kevin Haynes. Kevin is a rehab practitioner. He's a chiropractor by background. He is also a movement optimist and someone that has really good takes on training and rehab and pain. We had a great discussion. I really like talking to Kevin. We talked about his training, what good training often looks like, the process of training. So we talked a lot about training. We also talked about a little bit about life and learning and how cool a lot of this stuff can be. So I really hope you enjoyed this podcast with Kevin. You can find him at KH Movement on Instagram or on YouTube. And I hope you enjoy this episode. I know I did. Thanks for being here. I'm going to start this. And then I like,
okay.
So these are the topics I want to cover broadly. The first is like glass backs, the narrative that, you know, your back is going to be, is so fragile and it's such a bullshit thing. Right. The other one is just like how to get strong. Like, cause you're a strong dude. And, but
Thank
I also
you.
Like, I also, just am curious, like, you know, how you've gone about, cause I remember talking to you and you're like, I biked a lot in COVID and you got like skinnier and then you came back and like, now you're, you know, you're pretty big and strong again. You're not like super big, but you're big. I don't know. You're a big guy seemingly.
Yeah.
Like, but I think
trying to be.
What we've done in the fitness space, I've also just been reading, like a few books on like non-thinking. And I think we just have thought the process to death and it just made it more complicated for a lot of people. So I want to get your take on that. And then I just want to rant about shit that you think is stupid. So Kevin, let's start with the glass backs. You put out a post, I think it was yesterday, just about the fragilista. But why is it something that you are so, I said the word vehement. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. Like, why do you hate it so much? Why do you hate the glass back narrative?
It just creates fragile people. And then, well, I mean, on a flip side, I guess I could look at it as it gives me more patience because then more people are afraid and I can help more people. But yeah, it just creates fragile people. And I was a victim to it at one point in my life too, earlier on in my training career. I was like, oh, got to keep my back straight. I'm not going to go up and wait because my back's starting to round. So a little bit of a grudge against it, thinking, you know what, maybe I could be a little stronger if I wasn't a glass back early on. But yeah, the biggest thing is that it just comes down to like perpetuating this fragile mindset among a lot of people. And it's preying on people's fears of getting hurt to kind of sell their products and their ideas. And I think it's a little bit predatory in that way.
Yeah, I think it's a lot predatory. I think the tricky part of the coin is that like there's legit, like people legitimately have bad experiences where their back pain sucks. Like I literally had somebody on board with me like a week ago. And they went to like do, you know, they had like went to do like some sumo deadlifts and they like tweaked their back, right? And, you know, this is like week one of working together and they're like, oh, my back. And, you know, they have a prior history of back pain. It's concerning. They've also been told, you know, oh, it's disc, your discs are, you know, like you have degenerative disc disease, which we can also get into some of these things. Like these labels are just labels. There's so much variability in like the human condition for what that label means. And but it doesn't discount for the fact that like you've had a sucky, painful experience. Like that's kind of the hard part about this as like practitioners who want people to be like optimistic is like we still have to make this space for like it does suck when you tweak your back, right? How do you go about navigating that type of thing?
Yeah, just really validating, like, yeah, it's an awful experience. There's pain. And then just kind of trying to get them to think less about the pain and, oh, you know, what went wrong? What could they have done better? This sucks. What can't I do now? And flip and be like, okay, what can you do now? I know it sucks, but what are you able to do now? Things will get better. The body's great at healing. So we just need to find what you can do and then build it up over time. Yeah, we can look back on it and think, oh, why did this happen? Were you a little bit underprepared? Was it just a freak accident? If there's things that we can do a little bit better and a little bit differently to get you more prepared for it the next time you face something like that, awesome, we're going to do that. If it was one of those things where, you know, you're training hard and you just kind of reach that capacity, then it's a lot more work on the mindset around it and kind of getting people to not catastrophize as much. So that more kind of dictates what I do with them there. But it's
Yeah.
really find their entry point. That's really the big thing.
What was the what's your approach to the M, remind me, I saw your video on YouTube recently, like the MB, it's like a four letter
Oh, WWMVP.
WMBP. Yeah, so what does that stand for and why do you think that's an effective strategy?
It's what, modify, break, and progress. So like the what is like, okay, what's painful? What can you do? What can't you do? So it's just kind of like the information gathering that goes on throughout the whole framework. And then the next thing is modify. So you modify the movement so that you're still able to do it. Modify the movement as in the goal activity. So in the case of the patient that you had with sumo deadlift or back pain with sumo deadlifts, you would get them to modify their sumo deadlift. So, you know, maybe it's a block pull, or maybe it's just like light pause deadlifts that they're able to do, and you modify that. And then break is okay, what is the components of the goal movement? You know, you have a hinge, you have a knee bend, you have some back rounding. So you just kind of work on those individually and isolate each muscle group movement, the tissues, et cetera, however you want to look at it, and whatever is kind of needed in that certain case. And you pick exercises that work on those. And then the last part is the most important thing in rehab, which is very often missed, in my opinion, which is progress. So you want to progress everything. You want to
Yeah.
keep loading things heavier. You don't want to stay at the same entry point that the person came to you at week one. That's terrible rehab.
Yeah.
So you want
Yeah.
to progress everything until eventually just is training. Because that's really what rehab is. It's still just training. There's just the consideration of pain and tolerance.
Have you ever read any of like Dan Cleather's work, like the guy who wrote like The Little Black Book of Training Wisdom or Force?
No, I haven't.
Dude, it's good. He's really good. And it's crazy how like you know the goal of training, like he in I can't remember which book it is, but like the goal of training is to get better at producing force, because production of force in the various contexts of you know sport or life is like what allows us to do stuff, right? But in that training task is also usually the if you're doing it relatively well is a decreased risk for injury, right? Like so I've just really become like yeah like rehab is just freaking training. Like training, it's just all training, right? But I think you said something super powerful there. And when it comes to progression, I think it's tricky. One of the things that really helped me is understanding that like oh I have hopefully leveled up as an organism, right? So therefore I need to do more, right? As opposed to oh, when do I do more? Like, and it's hard because I think, you know, I think the barbell medicine crew is right where it's like you move up when you've adapted, right? You don't force adaptation. But I also think there's an element of like, yeah, you kind of do have to push yourself and like force adaptation a little bit. I don't think it's either or. Like, what's your take on that?
Well, this might have been like over a year ago now. I actually did a training vlog on this. And I call it progressive. So I say I like progressive loading, not progressive overload, because I'm in the stance where it's like, you know, you get stronger and that allows you to put more weight on the bar. But you still have to make it sufficiently challenging. So you still have to be in some aspect, yeah, forcing that, because you're making it hard, you're adding enough weight to challenge yourself and actually stimulate that adaptation. But you can't just be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to arbitrarily add this amount of weight every 4 weeks or 6 weeks, to kind of force this progressive overload, because that's just not how your body responds and it doesn't adapt that fast. And I think you actually made an Instagram post too, like maybe a year and a half ago, I'm thinking about, and you
You
gave
remember my post of a year? I don't remember my post from a year
Yeah,
ago.
you gave a of you're like, this is still progression kind of thing. And it was like, if week one a certain weight is an RP 7.5, and then by the time it was week four, it was like it was 6.5. It's like that's still progression.
Yeah.
That's still an effective dose. And
Yeah.
then you can progress the weight after that. And it's that same concept where it's like, okay, you don't have to continually push the weight to try to stay at the same RPE. We know that weights are effective at building strength across a larger range of RPEs or a larger range of intensity. So as long as you're giving enough effort and doing enough of it, it's going to still force that progression. And then once you get to that certain point where you're actually able to lift more weight at that RPE 7 or 7.5, then you can add that weight instead of being like, you know what, I'm adding 5 pounds. Now it's an RPE 8. That's not actually progression. You're just kind of undershooting and then rising up RPEs, but not actually making any progression. And you just kind of eventually add weight and add weight until you can't do it anymore.
That like kind of so we'll come we're gonna definitely weave around a bunch of topics, but like that comes to like what I alluded to is like how we've like thought the process to death, right? And like one of the things that, you know, a few years ago, like, oh, I'll just like arbitrarily start this block light, right? And then I'll like get the feeling of this linear progression over 6 weeks. But then you hit the wall that you should have been at week one, right? Like, and that's what a lot of like the powerlifting world has somewhat seemingly become, is like just give this sense of like fake-ish, not even fake progression, but like, yeah, like, okay, start the block arbitrarily light. Well, like, you're kind of just detraining yourself. You could be detraining yourself, or you're just not actually meeting yourself where you are. And like, that's what I think in the past, honestly, it's crazy because it's like in the past, like 4 to 6 months, I've just like really accepted like most of your training life is going to be spent in like a quote unquote plateau after the first 6 months ish of training in general, right? And depending on how you vary up your exercise selection, which is something I want to talk to you about too. But yeah, like, dude, we're just literally like arbitrarily like intellectualizing this very much feel and experiential process, right? And I think coaches are super useful in the feeling and the experiential process, but it's not because we're gonna write like a fucking perfect program. We need to write like the most simple program that allows like modification that we can, right?
Yeah, like as a coach or like rehab provider, your programming's easy. Programming is very easy. It's the connecting with the person that you're doing and then understanding that person, right? How do you communicate with them? How do you like give them the tools that they need to make on the fly changes? Or if you're working with them in person, in the session, okay, how do you make those changes and how do you talk to them? How do you connect with them? How do you explain everything to them so that they can best adhere to the program, really? But yeah, you're totally right. It's like overthought. It's as working out is very simple. A lot of things work. You just kind of have to try a little bit hard at least, and for a long time, again and again and again, and you're going to make gains and almost on no matter what program you do, as long as the effort's there. And yeah, it's just connecting with people at the end of the
Let's
day,
do this
really.
though. Like, what if you looked at a program and you were like, this is actually shit? What would that program look like in your brain? If you were gonna give me like the 4 to 5-ish like things, you're like, ah, this is just not this. Like, cause I'm in agreement. I think like there's a lot of ways to make progress. Like, you know, I've bought so many different programs over the years. Like, I got like Jeff Nippard, I got Barbell Medicine, and like what really it and it kind of helped me realize like, oh shit, this is just like sets and reps with some intensity prescription, right? Like, it's and a lot of this stuff can probably work. And also just being in like some gyms where like there was dudes drastically doing different things, like doing they were still lifting heavy, and but they were doing like one was like very volume oriented, one was very intensity oriented, and they're like they both were getting pretty strong, right? But what are the things you're like, that shit ain't gonna work?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it comes down more to like intensity prescription. So if it's just really low load all the time, then like that's not gonna work. Low load with a lot of reps in reserve, like 10 plus reps in reserve, you're not making gains. You're not really gonna get much stronger. You're not gonna get much more jacked, really. Like you're not gonna build that much muscle. And then the flip side is like if everything's RPE 10 and like all the time, then you're not going to be able to recover in time for your next session if they're like close together, or training is going to be really hard and miserable on your body and it's just going to kind of beat you down and you're going to need pretty frequent deloads. But in terms of like the exercises, Other than, Mustache Man's big three. I don't want to drop any names, but we all know who I'm talking about. I think everything goes. But even that, like, you can still load those up. You can still load up any exercise and it's still good. That was more just a little bit of a joke, but you can take anything, modify it enough that you can at least overcome physics to load it, because some exercises are going to be loaded by, once you get to a certain weight, you're just not going to be able to kind of keep your base of support. But if you can get rid of that factor, then anything's good. And it just comes down more to, like, okay, are you working sufficiently hard and are you able to recover enough for your next session?
Is Mark Rippetoe Mustache Man, or are you Mustache Man? Now I'm
No,
confused.
no. No, McGill.
Oh yeah. Oh God. See, I should have, that went right over my head. God, yes, dude. God, those exercises are
I don't think
so
I had the best
bad.
delivery on it.
No, that was good, dude. I'm sorry for missing it. I'm like, who the hell's Mustache Man? Well, because I thought you were referencing yourself, and I'm like, is Kevin Mustache Man?
No.
Dude, it's crazy because I've also heard the argument, and I don't think anybody disclaims this, like that Stu's just like a really, like, dude, I had a guy though, like at the end of summer, like reach out to me. And I'm sure you've gotten these calls or these texts too, where it's like where people are clearly like super concerned and like afraid, and they've tried all this stuff, but it's like literally all the wrong shit. Like, it's like I've tried all these fixes, and like I'm like, and but he's like, I even went to like Stu's house, and like I don't want to crap on him. Like, he's probably a really nice guy, but the nature of going down these research rabbit holes is like the same as like any other type of thing, where it's like you just start to buy in and you have this confirmation bias of what you're doing, right? And if you seem like a very relatively charismatic person, and you get declared. Like, I think Stacey Sims is honestly another one of these people right now that's kind of going through this, where it's like she's probably putting out some decent information, but a lot of it is also kind of like weirdly nocebic as well. And it's also somewhat unfounded. Don't get me wrong, like, I think women's health is important and stuff, but at the end of the day, like, there's not giant differences in some of these things that we're talking about, right? But like, the big three, like, I've had people like literally, like, I've been doing the big three for years. And I'm like, if you're doing it as like an activation warm-up for years and you still have back pain, do you think that's like it really is helping you? Like, and they're like, I mean, I don't know. Like, and so it's just even that thought, like something went off in their brain. It's like, oh, just, but nobody's ever asked them. Nobody's ever questioned it, right? So I don't know where I was going with that, but like my big thing, like, so let's talk about just your like approach to yeah, like I mean, I don't want to call it spine health, God, I almost did, but yeah, building a robust system, what are the characteristics, if somebody comes to you and they've been dealing with something for a while, right? Like, give me your abbreviated initial conversation to, hey, how do we start to expose you to some of these things that you're honestly afraid of?
I mean, I look, okay, what are you doing right now? What are your beliefs around it? What do you think your back can do? What do you think it can't do? Kind of get a good idea of, like, where their head is at, what information and messaging they've been receiving, so that I can best meet them where they are at, right? Because you don't want to just kind of totally dismiss someone who's coming and be like, hey, this is what I believe, this is what I feel, and you're like, nah, you're full of shit, right? It's like, okay, let's remember we're talking to a human here. Connect with them, meet them where they're at, and then just kind of find the entry points, right? If they're ready to go right into it, and I have people that come to me and they've already kind of have that selection bias of, they've seen my content, so they already know what I'm at. They're already at that next stage in their journey where they've kind of overcome this more glass back idea, and they're like, you know what, I want to build up a robust back. I want to be strong in every position. So that's a lot easier. It's like, okay, now I just give you every exercise that you want to kind of get to, and we find the entry points and build it up over time. But for someone who's coming to me and they're a little bit more afraid, like the example you gave just before, talking about the big three, where the person's like, you know what, I'm afraid of my back. I've been doing the big three for years, and that's where they're at. It's like, okay, well, we can still do that, and then have some conversations about, load management, capacity, preparedness. Start with a little bit more talking and just kind of get them to understand things some more, but also that's really boring. So don't spend too much time there, and also get them moving and get them doing things that, you know, are at least engaging and fun. And sometimes it can involve those other movements, and it can really violate their expectations of it, you know, to kind of use the catchphrase. And then all of a sudden, like, hey, I'm rounding my back, or I'm flexing my back to the side, and it doesn't feel bad, and it actually feels good. It's like, see, your back is capable of that movement. Now we can load it up. So a little bit of getting them to experience it, so that they can then become ready to learn everything and become more curious about it. And then you can progress it. So it's really person dependent. I know this is like not a super great
No,
definitive answer to your
oh, that's
question,
good.
but
I think it's an appropriate answer. I, you know,
yeah.
none of these things are like you're 100% right. Like you have to acknowledge the thoughts and beliefs, the prior things, because if you don't, that person's just gonna not want to work with you, right? So, and
Yeah,
that, you know,
or you'll
like that's
send them
something.
into a spiral, right?
Yes,
Like,
right? Like an existential spiral. And like, you know, and I think what we ultimately want people to know is like, there's so many options. And like when I had Greg Lehman on, and it was like, there's just so many options. Like, you know, we don't really know what works better than anything else, really, right? Like, and that's like one of the things that really changed for me. When I was like in just like a traditional kind of crunch, it was, I don't want to say the clinic was crummy. It was just the insurance-based system. It was like, I was just a lot of times helping people reframe, like, hey, does biking feel good? Yeah, that's a good sign, right? Does walking feel good? Yeah, that's a good sign. Like, there are so many, like, really what we're just trying to do is trying to take your association away from back pain being this thing that's debilitating you to actually seeing all the things you can do. And the more you do the things you can do, the more you're going to be open yourself up to being able to do more things, right? And also, like, dude, loading the dishwasher sucks. Like,
yeah.
it's not an ideal position. Like, you don't always feel good doing it. I woke up this morning, I went for a walk, and I was like stiff. And I like reached down to pick up my dog's bowl and like put food in it. And I'm like, oh, my back's a little sore. So it's really like understanding that you're still gonna get some feedback from the system, right? It's, are we confident enough to manage that feedback and just look at it like, hey, yeah, that's just me waking up after sleeping for 8 hours, or I'm a little bit not loosened up, right? And ideally, I want to build up this capacity and be able to not have like a whole lot of feedback from my body, but also some amount of feedback is just your body saying like, oop, yep, just be smart here, right? Or, you know, be mindful, but not necessarily in a negative way, right?
Yeah. I always like to view it as like, you know, your body's kind of like, I know this kind of like separates the person inside themselves, but it's like your body's kind of like communicating with you, right? It's just giving you information, and it doesn't mean that it's like always right and telling you things. It's not authoritarian and telling you what to do. It's a two-way conversation. It's like, hey, you can talk back to it and be like, well, you know what? Yeah, like, okay, there's pain there. I'll take it a little bit easier. Like, well, you know what? I'm just a little bit stiff and I know this is why. So this information that you're giving me is okay, but we need a little bit more. It's not kind of like the end of the world here. We don't need to stop activities. It's like, keep that conversation going, understand it. Don't take it as like this authoritarian big warning system of like, stop. Just think like,
Yeah.
okay, this is information.
Yeah. I think some of the best things in my life for me have been like the separation of like judgmental mind and like just feeling self, right? I'm actually reading, like, it's right behind me, The Inner Game of Tennis. Have you ever read that book?
No.
Dude,
Yeah,
come
I got
on.
it. You got to send me a book list.
I'm gonna send you a book here, but like, so I actually read this book called what was it called? It's by Joseph Nguyen or whatever, and it was, what is his book? It's such a short book. What do we got? Don't believe everything you think, right? And so much of that is like, hey, you have, and we know this, you have like a quiet mind that's just observant, and then you have like your thinking, analytical, judgmental mind, right? And that book's all about just managing the fact that, like, most of the time when you're the happiest, like, you're not actively like thinking about shit, right? Especially stuff you can't control. You're just like being present, right? And that book, The Inner Game of Tennis, is about, like, he's a tennis instructor, Timothy Galway, and he's like, we layered on this judgmental way of trying to teach people tennis. And he's like, most of tennis is just helping people helping people do something that feels good to them and see what the outcome is, right? And looking at, oh, the shot landed in, good, like, or not even good, cool, right? Like, you don't even have to judge it, you just see what happens. And that's what we've done. We've marketed to people, we've told stuff to people's bad, like, oh, we have people capitalizing, which brings us back to our glass back discussion on making people feel fragile, like making people feel like the human body is not set up to have any spinal flexion. And, you know, these people, like, you know, we could say McGill and Andrew Locke and some of these people, like, they have so much belief in confirmation bias. So, like, their confirmation bias just spins forward that I think they vehemently, I keep using that word, it must be just in my mind, I think they believe in it. I don't even know what it means. I got to check that up.
Yeah.
But,
quick
like,
Google search
they
for it.
I think they legitimately believe in what they're putting out, right? And then it becomes an argument, right? Passionate, intense manner of great feeling. Okay, I got that right then. Vehemently. All right. Anyway, but like, and because I think the E3 rehab crew had like Stu on and they were going to have like a debate with him and it just turned into like an argument, right? And it wasn't really productive. And they're like, we're not going to do that again because it's like, why? But, what do you think is why? This is a deep question. I just don't think it helps people. Like, you're gonna round your back. You're gonna move and twist in awkward ways. Like, you're going to do those things, right? It's no matter if you try to avoid it, it is going to happen. So why do we do that? Like, why do people think, is it just selling something, or, you know, do they move like robots all day? What do you think?
Yeah, I have no clue how they move all day. Like, I'm sure they bend their backs and do all these kind of different things. Like, I think actually on the podcast with Peter Attia, McGill was talking about, you know, how he lifts logs when he's up at his cabin or something like that. And it's like, well, good luck getting it off the ground without rounding your back and then like going overhead with it without extending your spine too. So it's like you're not going to be able to keep that perfectly flat back with it all the time. So I think there's just like a little bit of disconnect in some of like what the messaging is and at least how intensely they message it, and then actually doing it. Like, they're missing the link of load management with it, really, and preparedness. But I just think, yeah, they don't necessarily see it because they believe in these things so much. And, you know, maybe they've gotten good results for themselves and they've helped other people with it because they're doing some load management on those people and then building it up and actually getting stronger, because it's people that come to them that, you know, either have been going above their capacity and then rest and then go right back to where they were. So they just kind of keep getting hurt. And then it's this framework and this system that can at least allow them to progressively load things a little bit, and get back into things at a better pace and manner, so they get results, and then that gets wrongfully attributed to avoiding positions and those positions being bad. And then, oh, where was I going with this now?
You're doing good.
But
I like
it. Oh, thanks. But yeah, I think it's just that, you know, they've seen some results, they believe it. It makes it really simple too, so it's just like this very tangible thing of, okay, you know what, you want this positioning, and this positioning is bad, instead of being like, oh, you know what, you need to increase your capacity and your load management. Well, how do you know you're working within your capacity? You don't until you're not, right? You can kind of assume it, and like, if you start feeling bad, it's like, well, I wasn't quite in my capacity, or I'm like right near the limit of it, so then I need to bring things down just slightly. Or, and the reality is too, like, if you're pushing yourself to get better, that's an uncomfortable pursuit, so you're going to be walking that line, and like, sometimes you're going to be beyond it, sometimes you're going to be within it. So kind of coming to terms with that too. But it's a lot more intangible, that concept of capacity and load management, than being like, this is bad, this is good. So I think that kind of gravitation towards a simple explanation is another factor in it. I do want to kind of call way back and touch back on like the rabbit hole of going into the research that you were talking about at the beginning with the big three. That is... what I find with that is people are reading to, I actually had a good little talk with someone in my comments the other day. I mean, I was being a little bit snarky and a bit of a a dick back to them, but it wasn't too bad, I don't think. But you know, it's reading to look for an answer and to look for the answer to your question rather than just reading to understand. Because they were saying like, oh, this in the summary it says this. I'm like, okay, well, in the summary they referenced one of McGill's papers where there's like, you know, that flexion relaxation phenomenon. The longissimus muscle actually stops working at full flexion, right? Full hip flexion and spinal flexion. I was like, okay, well, why is that? You know, if you actually think it through, it's because in an unweighted forward fold, you're just resisting gravity. At a certain point, you know, gravity is going through it's parallel to the muscle and is going through the axis of rotation. So the moment arm's zero. So the muscle doesn't have to work to keep the body up because it's not fighting against gravity. So it's not that, you know, getting into that position just all of a sudden turns everything off because it's magical. It turns everything off because
Because
it's
it's
not
gravity.
resisting
It's
anything. So.
there's no external load to be man. I mean, there's no like, there's no lever arm to, and which, dude, reading to understand as opposed to reading to find, that's such a great frame. I was actually thinking about this morning, because what happens when I read sometimes is I just start trying to go super fast. And I'm not like actually taking in the information. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And it's funny because you said that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm reading to like find the solution to life, right? Instead of just reading to understand and just take in and like utilize and like create kind of this, you know, this system of knowledge that helps me move forward. It's like reading to enjoy something and reading because like you want to just learn versus like reading to. And that's what training can be too, but just like reading to like check off the I read that book, right? And I get into that too. Like how many books can I read this
I'm
year?
gonna read 20 books this
I'm gonna
year. It's
I'm gonna
like, well,
read
how
50
about
books
you
this year, but I understood
understand
none
one
of it.
book really well?
Yeah, and
That's
like I think
the first goal.
both can be effective, right? Like, you know, I've been rereading books now, and it's like, damn, like I remember reading this book, and I don't remember that at all. And it's because A, you're just not going to remember everything you read in a book, especially when you're not like studying the book. But B, you're just like the second time you go through information, the third time you go through information, like the fourth time you do something, like, you know, I just like clean and jerked, where I cleaned like 100 for 3, which is like, I mean, it's sad, but that's like my best clean and jerk for 3. And I'm like, I'm happy
That's
about it.
awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
But like,
congrats on the
it's like,
PR. Like, that's
yeah,
big.
exactly. And like, and some of it's just like, you know what I'm stopping doing? I'm stopping like worrying about the fucking outcome, and I'm just training hard, right? I'm just like, hey, you did 90, you know, you did 95. Nothing really has to change. The bar might just feel a little bit heavier. So just fucking keep pulling, right? And it's like it can't be that simple, but we just get in our own way, right? And so I do want to like take this into like what is your approach to training? Because like, do you follow a specific program? Do you write your own thing? Do you audible a lot? Because you do a lot of obviously like Zercher style lifts, at least in your videos. But let's just be honest, those are gonna get you like if you're just showing you bench pressing, like close grip bench pressing, like nobody cares, right? But
I'm not a big enough outlier in strength, especially in bench. I'm nowhere near an outlier. I'm if anything below the curve a little bit of like all the strong people. So I'm not outlier enough to get views on
Wouldn't it
just
be
doing, you
sweet
know,
if like
squat, bench,
if a
deadlift.
two plate close grip bench press got us views?
Oh
Like,
man, I love that.
you got like 275 on it, let's go. With at a normal gym, like that would be pretty awesome. But like in the age of the internet, where you're literally comparing yourself to freaks who, you know, John Flagg, John Flagg's a powerlifting coach. He's like a close buddy of mine, and he posted this video of him like board pressing like 515 a couple weeks ago, and it was like yeah, so you know, you just it's when you're you know lifting really heavy, you don't need a whole lot of stimulus, and it's like him doing 505, and he's like, so 505 moved really good, and then he does like 510, he's like 510 moved really good too, and then he does 515, and he's like, you know, 515 is all I need today. And I'm like, oh my, I put in the comment, I'm like, yep, 515 is all you need.
Yeah.
And it's just been
Yeah,
this
that's
running
good. That's a
joke.
nice light day.
Yeah, it's yeah, all you need is 515. It's like, God, like if I'm squatting, if I ever squat 515, I'll be happy, right? But that's the we're just in the and it's also super cool because he was honestly like he'll tell you this. He's like he just up until he was 30, he just didn't have it figured out. And now he's about 40, he just turned 40. And he's like, yeah, and I just make slow and steady progress over the course of 10 years. I stopped trying to do it all in 6 week blocks or 12 week blocks, and you just learn to feel things out better, right? And that's like, you know, we talk about that all the time. He's like learning to feel stuff, and like good lifters often say that, but like beginners are like, whoa, what do I do? How do I just feel it out? And it's like, well, you take 5 years of training and listening to yourself and figuring out what you want, and good things happen. Anyway, Kevin, what is the Kevin Haynes training system?
I program for myself, and it's about 80% programmed and then just like 20% vibes. So I leave some room to just kind of be like, you know what, I'm gonna do what I want to do on this day is like extra for one or two exercises. And on the day, I make the decision, and it's like, okay, you know what, this is what I'm doing. It still lines up with my program and like my goals for that day and doesn't affect things. I don't do anything stupid most of the time. Sometimes I do, you know, you gotta have some fun with it, keeps it fresh. But yeah, a lot of it is like programmed in. I program in the Zurchers. I do them with my deadlift day every week. Actually, I do them twice a week. Even I have another secondary, very light Zurcher day. Yeah, like most of it's programmed in, and it's kind of the what you're talking about. It's boring training. It's the same thing again and again, at a manageable load, and then eventually, you know, I can put some extra weight on, and then that allows me to do the dumb stuff when I want to, and make progress. And it's just to kind of touch on that point of like what you said, where it's like, you know, it's not a 6 week block. It's like 5 years. Like that's exactly what it is. You're working on a skill. So if you want to feel it out and understand how to feel it out, it's exactly what it'd be like teaching someone to play guitar. Like, okay, how do you feel out the music and like understand music theory while you're playing? Well, you take years and years of practicing that instrument and practicing music theory and playing music and learning music and learning all these other parts of it. It's the same thing with training. It's like, okay, you know what? You do these movements for long enough, you understand your body more, you learn these training principles a little bit more, you spend a good portion of time to see how certain variables and certain kind of training approaches affect the outcomes and how you feel with them. And then you learn from it. And like certain, like long enough times isn't like 4 6 week block with trying something out. It's like, you know what, maybe you do it for 4 or 6 weeks here, but then you do it 4 or 6 weeks again
Down
later.
the road.
And
Yeah.
yeah, and it's those repeated bouts with it where it's like, okay, now you understand how training like this works and how it works for you and how it affects your body and what it actually feels like and like what going hard is like. But yeah, it's a skill, and you got to take time with it and take that time to learn. And that's my training. It's the same thing, just
Yeah,
long period of time.
give us like your weekly overview. Give us like the 80%, maybe with like sprinkling. This is something that I want to do because I think it does demystify it, like what people are doing a lot of times. Like, yeah, so like what's he doing? So like, but like give us like your 80%. You don't have to give us every detail, but like what does your weekly schedule kind of look like?
So I do 6 days a week. I do three kind of like upper push focused and then three like lower and back focused almost. I pair my back with my lower because I find if I'm doing like rows or pull-ups with my upper push day, then like when I'm doing deadlifts, my lats usually just get and other accessories as well. My lats just kind of take a bit of a beating, and then by the end of the week I'm not feeling all that great. So it's like, you know, I have the regular bench press, overhead press, and then I have French press and lateral raises, or not lateral raises, chest flies in. And then like my vibes on that is like, okay, am I gonna do some extra forearm training? Am I gonna do some extra delt training, like lateral flies, or like I take the mace and then do my forearm training? Am I gonna do some like random little hopping that's not going to affect my next day on deadlifts, where it's like light plyos, or just, you know, maybe I mess around with handstands. Have some fun, right? It's like, try this new thing that I want to try and haven't done. Like, oh, am I going to try out some bent press maybe? Because I don't do a lot of bent press and I want to figure out the movement. Maybe I'll throw that in here and there. And, you know, after throwing it in here and there for a year, it's like, okay, I've put in enough good sessions that I finally figured it out. And now I can use it as like a solid movement itself. And the next day would be like hinge focus day. So it's like my deadlifts and the Zercher deadlifts. And then I have some, I mean, I still have quads in there, like front squats and pull-ups. And then it's like, okay, what am I going to do now? Am I going to do my side bends? Am I going to do my twists? I want to do some kind of ab movement. Am I going to do my full range sit-ups? And then it's like, okay, am I going to do other jumps with it too, maybe, or calves? Although I have calves programmed in later in the week, but I like to hit them about twice. And that's just kind of how it goes every day. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do these main exercises that, you know, I'm trying to make gains in, and then I have enough time to mess around, and the vibes are like, okay, do I want to practice this skill that I want to get good at, or do I want to target these certain muscles that I know are like lacking a little bit? And then since I have the luxury of being able to train 6 days a week, it's like, well, I'm going to hit those muscles multiple times in that week. I'm going to practice some skill multiple times in that week that I'm working on, because I can take 10 minutes and just toss it in at the end, no problem. But that's like pretty much what every day looks like. It's the same boring stuff for like four exercises and then one or two vibes.
No, I like it. I think that's if and so let's go into like load management, right? And for yourself and for other people. But I like you like I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like 80-20 this stuff. 80% of it somewhat structured, progressive in nature, repetitive. You're looking to kind of advance, like honestly, kind of the big movement patterns that if you get like, I think this is my biggest thing with the Olympic lifts is like, I just need to get freaking stronger legs. Like it really comes down to that. Like for where I'm gonna go with those over the next however long, it's like it's my limiter is probably going to be my leg strength. I will say that I think sprinting and that like some form of like power development in conjunction with specific practice, I think sprinting is A, fun, and B, I do think like there is something about like people who are fast, like sprinters, like they come in and they can put out power outputs with a barbell like so much faster than people who just don't like ever sprint. Like it's kind of sickening, right? Like you see like a football player who's like never touched a barbell, but they're like fast and they come, or they touch a barbell, but they've never done like a power clean and they come power clean like 140, like for the first time they ever do it. And you're like, fuck, right?
Like I've been working on
I've
that
been
for
doing it. I've been
years.
trying to do this my whole life. But
I
I like sprinting was one of those things like I just didn't do for like 10 years because it wasn't in like the central dogma of like lifting, right? And it's like, and I'm like, damn. And now looking back, it's like, that's probably like the most functional thing that humans can do is like sprint, right? Run, like run and sprint. And like, I'm not saying that the other thing, I hate the functional term, but I'm like, from a like practicality standpoint, like sprinting is pretty dope and just people stop doing it. Sprinting and jumping, right? I had a lady, one of my clients, she's over 60 and I get it. And I kind of put in a little bit of hopping. And she's like, just, people over 60 don't need to be hopping, do they? And I'm like, you play pickleball. Like, this is the type of stuff that will actually help you get strong and capable. And like, I said, don't do anything you don't feel comfortable doing. And she'll come see me in person and we'll work on it probably, just try to establish some comfort. But like, I'm like, this is the stuff that like will keep you young. But people shy away from it, right? So, load management. You get somebody that has never come to the concept of that, or like, what are you talking about? Like, I also had like this disagreement with another practitioner. Like, not everything's like biopsychosocial, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know if you understand biopsychosocial, but like, what are the loads that we're managing when we're talking about load management?
Everything really, right? It's like, you know, life stress too, even it involves in that. Work demands, life demands, you know. Oh, you have a kid and they're just starting to walk and run around and you're having to bend over and pick them up a bunch. All that is load, all that is work. You know what? You're not getting as much sleep. They're waking up fussy and going to bed later or something like that. A lot of my patients and clients, you know, are in this situation where it's like, you know, the kids are going through these transition points, and it's like every time the kid has that transition point, things are flaring up, training's going down, and it's like, well, you know what? You just have a new life stress, right? Your offspring is changing and what they're doing, and your demands are changing. So you got to consider that. And that is part of load management. It's like, okay, what things can you actually move around, and what variables can you change? You can't change what your child's doing, really. You can't really change how much sleep you're getting. But you know what? You can change your training, your style of training, the load you're doing, how frequently you're going, and how you view training and having fun with it. I'm actually making a video on odd lifts and how I love them, because adding them into your program can make training a lot more fun. It becomes less of like a psychological stress too. Like
Yeah.
that's one of the points in it. And it's like that straight up is it. If your training's boring and monotonous, which is like, yeah, that's what you want for strength, but if that's all it is, then you know what? Maybe you need to spice it up a little bit and change it so it doesn't become that mental stress, and it's not adding on to it and dragging you down more, but you can actually make it more fun and make it a little bit more reinvigorating. And then that makes your life less stressful all around. And then now you can actually get better training. You can be a better parent. You can be a better partner. You can perform better at work, et cetera. You know what? You can actually go and find some time to have fun and take care of yourself because you're not so like stressed and drained. I know this is like a huge tangent on that and a little bit like exaggerated,
No.
but it's true. I've seen it with my patients, and that all affects it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just always go, it's like we're just trying to tweak all the levers we can to actually keep you doing the thing, right? I said this to somebody yesterday. It's like if you were like a star athlete and, you know, we're mid-season and we're going to make a playoff run. We know we're going to make a playoff run and you're like super like beat down. It's like you don't have to play the whole game, right? Like there's no reason to play like and but people like average Joes would feel bad, you know, that are super consistent. They feel bad, oh, I only hit three sessions this week, right? Or I had to like just go ride the bike for 20 minutes. It's like if you were a star athlete and it's like you need to take a little bit of rest, that would be like the best thing for you and you would have no qualms, right? But it's like you're an average Joe who's got working 50 hours a week and you have a little kid and you feel bad that you didn't hit 315 for 5 sets of 5 on back squat because you felt like dog shit. Like you're not helping yourself, right? And this is my mindset I'm overcoming as well. It's like it's literally like load management, and this is why I think like Mike Teixeira's like take what's there mentality is like if you just take what's there and you modify appropriately, like you're gonna get stronger in the aggregate, right? You're gonna still have dips and you're gonna still struggle sometimes and you're gonna have periods where nothing really, you know, and there's a lot of factors too. Like, like you said, are you enjoying what you're doing? Are you just beating your head against the wall because this is what you feel like you should do, right? I think like little variation, because basically how you and me do things is not super far apart. It's like I like to train a lot, so I train about I like do something every day. Like Sundays are like a bike day or a like just an easy run type of thing. Like today is like a chill bike ride. So it's like 5-ish to 6-ish days of like challenging work.
I think we
But
have the
like
same weekly schedule.
yeah. Well, and but it's like what I realize is like I like to move every day. So don't fight that. Just don't be an idiot about it, right? Like and even yesterday, and so much of this too is like, I did not feel like working out when me and my wife went in the garage at 5:30. Like, or, you know, I just didn't want to do it. But once I started getting warm up, I'm like, I'm glad I'm here. Cool, yay, right? And you just like start to feel good. And I think people just like that sounds like such a cliche thing, but it's like just get warmed up. If you just get warmed up, and then see where you're at, good things happen. But like variation, like, dude. It really comes down to like proximity to failure. Like, if you're trying to get stronger, are you within like 3 reps of failure? So if you do a set of 8 versus a set of 3, like, and you're within 3 reps of failure, or you're probably getting a stimulus, right? If you're doing close grip versus wide grip, it doesn't really matter. You're probably getting a stimulus, right? If you're doing pause squats or, you know, high bar, low back, or low bar, like front squats. Like, if you're squatting, you're probably getting a stimulus, right? And I think that's just been one of the biggest things for me is just like, just tweak the variable a little bit so that you can psychologically just do the thing without judgment, right?
Yeah, and it's just about like doing something. Like you said, you know, there's going to be those plateaus and there's going to be those dips. There's going to be the time where you can't do as much. But it's like, I always tell my patients, like, you know, if you're doing at least something, you're not doing nothing and regressing, right? It's like, just not every part, like, and this kind of is a greater metaphor for life too, right? Not every moment of your life is going to be increase in growth. Sometimes you're going to have those plateau moments, and sometimes you just need to like go with the flow, ride the wave, and just kind of, you know, do what you can do to at least maintain and stay where you're at. And then that gives you the freedom to push hard when you need to push hard and then catch that next kind of rise up in growth because, you know, you've been putting in the work consistently. You did what you could do, but you let yourself recover, right? You let yourself take care of other things that you need to take care of, right? Oh, you know what? Life is very busy and stressful right now, and that's where the majority of your energy needs to go. You can take a little bit away from training, still do something. That's okay if you only hit, you know, 225 for two sets of five instead of 315 for three sets of three. Like, okay, you did what you could and you still got movement in, you still practiced the skill, you still got some stimulus in, you still worked your body and you put the energy where it needed to go at that moment. And then that allows you to come back where you still were instead of being like, I'm busy here, I'm not going to train at all. Or like, oh, you know what, I can only do this, why would I do it? That's that all or nothing kind of mindset on it is pretty harmful. It's like, take what you can, like just ride it and kind of keep it maintained, because it's really easy to maintain like your level of strength and muscle as long as you're doing something like a few times a week. You're gonna at least maintain, if not make some small gains, and then you can still recover.
Well, and it's just like adaptation, like true, like most of these things are just so incremental. Like you don't even notice the changes until, you know, like you're like, oh, and like, it, dude, hit, setting PRs and like those increases in performance are awesome, right? But then they're gonna, they're then like you're just gonna habituate, and then you're gonna be like, I have so many clients. It's like when they started with me, you know, they were like they're at such a higher level than they when they started, but then they're just like, ah, oh, why am I not making? I'm like, just look back, like look back. And so much of this is just a game of learning to reflect and realize that, like, yeah, if in a 6 month period, like you put on 10 pounds to your bench press, or you make any like real the like, 'cause this is where I kind of want to end it, but like. Is kind of the marketing of like social media and what we're bombarded with. Like, how would you tell people to approach that? Like, either from like as if you're a coach who wants to tell the truth type of thing, to if you're a consumer, like how do you look at like the stuff on Instagram? But like, yeah, there's it, none of this stuff is gonna be like this linear journey to the top of the mountain, right? It's really like just being on the journey, right? Which is such a cliche and lame thing, but the journey is cool. If you just accept that it's a journey, right? Yeah, thoughts on that, and then the Instagram biosphere of how to be a consumer of good fitness. Like, say you're not, you know, a chiropractor or a physio or a coach, you're just somebody who wants to get strong. Like, you know, take your brain out of it and be like, well, you know what you know. No, here's a better way to ask this. Who are the people that you like look at their content and you're like, this is the stuff. This is like good stuff. It's probably not gonna go super viral because it's not, you know, bullshit claims type of thing. But yeah, so touch on those points for me, Kevin.
I really like how you kind of viewed it as like, you know, it's the journey and like the journey is cool. And that's really the biggest thing is like falling in love with that process, making the process, you know, interesting to you. Sometimes you have to relate it back to your goal and kind of be like, you know what, you're gonna have to do things that aren't the most fun at the moment to get that delayed gratification, and that like achieving that goal is fun. And sometimes you're not going to see big gains, you're going to see dips, but it's like, you know, if you're still doing something, that's still a drop in the bucket of success that you're making improvements, and that feels good, and that's something to enjoy with the journey, and kind of finding ways to gamify little aspects sometimes, you know, like, oh, you know what, maybe I try something a little bit different on my last exercise of the day, and I still do my main things, and as long as you're just doing something, you're like kind of climbing, looking back to where you came every once in a while, like where you started off at your lowest point, and looking at the progress you made, and just kind of understanding, like, yeah, this is a long time frame. I can have fun with this. I just need to consistently show up, and then eventually I'll be at that mountain. Just yeah, expanding that view on it, or like I was about to say prognosis, the practitioner in me was coming out, but it's like, yeah, you just look longer term and find ways to enjoy that journey and that climb up the mountain. And the whole process is like a game of figuring something out and figuring that puzzle out, and like, okay, what works, what doesn't work, what is making progress. And that I think can really help to understand the journey a little bit better. And then in terms of Instagram, people who are putting out good information, Dave Strength and Kindness, KH Movement, those are probably the top two I'd say
Let's go.
follow.
Let's go.
Yeah, but yeah, honestly, it's like the people who are putting out that boring messaging is really what is correct. That like more middle ground, almost a little bit more boring messaging, where it's like, do the same thing. If people seem like it's really thought out, instead of like one simple answer, but there's like usually like, well, some nuance to their post at least, or like in the caption, or at least, some posts are going to have to be a little bit reductionist just for the sake of it being a short form video or a carousel on Instagram, and trying to get some clicks, you got to play the game a little bit. So not every
We're
post can be
definitely
so well
trying to
thought
get
out.
your we're trying to get your attention. We're just trying to like not do it in like predatorial ways, right? Or like
Yeah.
it's definitely it's kind of a fun game, the more I think, like the more, but it's like how like and I, you also are kind of like you want people to like know what you stand for, right? So I think that's where a lot of like people go wrong is like you don't ever clearly demarcate like what you stand for. Like, and that doesn't mean like I stand for kind of the middle ground, like you said, which is not like, hey, you should never move your spine and you should just break your shit with stupid training, right? Like, I'm not over on that side. You know, I do think you need to understand that like systems like the human body still have limits. And we have to respect those things. But if you train appropriately, your limits usually expand, right? Or your comfort zone expands, and that's really good, right? And like you're kind like you've gotten a little bit more, I don't know, maybe you haven't, but like you've just gotten a little bit more zingy, or like you go after it. You're like, this is fucking stupid. And I should do
Yeah.
that a little bit.
Yeah, I've started to kind of, I don't know, maybe care a little bit less sometimes. Like
Well,
instead of being so concerned of like, okay, what is this message putting out? Or it's like, well, do I have to play within like these certain rules? I'm kind of like, you know what? These are my thoughts. This is how I feel. Sometimes it's like a little bit almost reductionist because, like I said, Instagram, we're limited with what we can put out as like a reel. It's like I can't make a whole 30-minute talking video on something because that's also extremely boring. I'm not going to get any views if I add
I think
every
you were
little
gonna
bit of
do like
nuance to
a
every
just
post.
30 minutes of me just riding the bike on like YouTube.
I 1 hour I put it up. It's just silent. I played my Game Boy a little bit. I got frustrated because I kept pressing the wrong button at one point. But no talking. It
many views
was
does that
just
video
riding the
have?
bike. 700 something, I think.
That's
But like,
unbelievable.
yeah,
But
the average view is only like a minute long though.
yeah,
Like most people
still,
just skip through.
yeah. Dude, oh,
So,
that's so funny. I do like, so I've just started to put, I mean, I put these podcasts up on YouTube. I do think like long form content is also can be really awesome, but it's like, do you really need a 30-minute video of me explaining XYZ? Like, or do you just need me to like tell you the main points and like, what are we really doing here? Right? Like, and it's okay. I think either one's great. I think it kind of goes back to, are you seeking this thing to solve this one problem that like you perceive as a problem, when if you just learn more, it'll probably get solved, right? Like it's like reading, what was that quote?
Read to understand.
Reading to understand versus like reading to solve your problem type of thing, or like whatever, right? I think that's a really good frame. Last question. Three favorite exercises.
Oh, Three favorite exercises. Well, Zercher deadlift is definitely up there. I absolutely love Zercher deadlift. It's just fun. Great stimulus. Oh, I don't know about after that. Honestly, I've really been liking just some good old standard barbell curls lately. So at the moment, like, just to kind of spread it out, because I already got the hinge with the Zercher deadlift. Honorable mentions to hack deadlift and just regular deadlift, conventional deadlift behind that. But for some good biceps, having strong and big biceps is also very functional. I don't know why people don't think it is. You have to use them all the time. I give all my patients bicep curls if they have like an upper body complaint usually.
Dude, for my elbows, like
So helpful.
curls are incredible. Like combination of a little bit of grip and just like elbow, most of my tendonitis type of stuff, tendinopathy type of stuff goes away when I'm doing curls on a regular basis.
Yeah.
When I'm not, I get like elbow moans and groans. So,
Yeah.
dude, they're
So
good.
yeah, I think standard barbell curls are up there. Also, because way back in my kind of like glass back days, where I was like also a little bit more like functional bro somewhat, where it's like, oh, you just squat and deadlift, and I was actually doing the Olympic lifts, so it was like squat and then do snatch and clean and jerk, and you never need to do any direct arm training, and it's actually bad.
Yeah.
I also avoided curls. So curls are making a big comeback in my mind over the last multiple years. So keeping that there. And then, oh, I don't know. It's between ego rows and overhead press. I don't know if I can decide between them, because the ego rows is just fun, kind of like finding that rhythm. Like with a barbell on a deficit, I absolutely love that. And then overhead press is just something so satisfying about pushing some weight overhead,
I like Z presses. I like overhead
Yeah.
presses, but I really like freaking Z presses for some reason. I
I've
think they're really fun.
actually, I think I've only done like two or three Z presses in my life. Right. Up here, we call them Z presses.
Ooh, yeah. Dude, they're
But
fun. I like I
yeah.
also like pin presses. I do. I like overhead pressing too. I think okay, so if there was three, let's just keep this going really quick. Three lifts that you would like love to. Yeah, like your Zercher deadlifts, like you're a really strong puller, but what are your weaknesses and what are like the three lifts that you would really love to bring up?
What are my weaknesses? Also, I have a bunch of time still if you want to yap a little bit
Okay, we can
more.
keep yapping.
My weaknesses, bench press for sure. So like just over like upper body pressing rather. So like bench press and even overhead press. I'd say like I'm not at body weight and overhead press. My bench press has only kind of started to go up in the last couple of years. So that's probably.
What do you attribute your upper body woes to?
Avoiding bench press for the longest time just because of like bad messaging. So like growing up, I was playing hockey and it was like, oh, it's all about the legs. Just in the sphere I was in, so I didn't do tons of upper body. When I was in high school, I mean, I did my curls and stuff, but like no, not really enough bench press. And then when I got into weightlifting, like Olympic style weightlifting, the messaging was, oh, don't bench because it'll ruin your overhead mobility, which is complete BS.
Yeah, so
Benching's not going to
stupid.
ruin your overhead mobility. Not going overhead
Right.
and training that is going to ruin your overhead mobility. You
Yep.
can bench a ton and still go overhead. Like Lasha benches, what, like over 400 pounds
Yeah.
easily.
Yeah.
And he has no problem going overhead. You look at all the like really top weightlifters and they actually throw up solid numbers on bench press.
I always think it's funny because it's like the more I think. The weightlifting world, the US, I don't like, let's be honest, I'm not a freaking I'm not like a expert in this, but like the countries that I think are that dominate the weightlifting world, like they have like strength work where it's like pretty much the like it's squatting, pulling, pressing, like strength oriented work, and then they do the Olympic lifts in combination, like various training cycles and stuff. And yeah, dude, like it's one of those things that's like when you're kind of like green to this, it's like, whoa, so bench pressing limits my overhead mobility. Okay. And you believe it. And then you're like, wait, why? Why the fuck does that make sense? Like,
Yeah.
yeah, if I go too heavy too often, my shoulders hurt, and it then is a little bit feeling restrictive. But I could also just like, dude, I talked to Lucas Hardy, range of strength guy, super nice guy. But he's like,
Oh, yeah, he's the best.
the
Love
reason
him.
to hang is not because it's magical. The reason to hang is just because it feels good and it just stretches out your lats and stuff, and people just don't do it. And it's the same thing with like pressing overhead. People just don't do it. And like that's the thing that helps you the most is just doing the damn thing, right? Rant over. Shunned.
Yeah.
Unshunned.
Done. But yeah, it's like, you know what? I didn't do it for so long, so I just didn't build up any mass up top. So I just had like nothing,
Yeah.
didn't have like the skill.
Can I be honest? I just think I'm bad at bench pressing, and I've finally gotten over that. And just like, dude, just stop fucking saying that to yourself and just start
Yeah.
getting better, right?
Yeah, that limiting mindset too. Like if you think, "Oh, I'm bad at bench pressing, so I don't want to do it." You're going to do other things. You're going to put less time into it.
Yep.
And train it less. Like, "Oh, when was this? This would have been in like 2020 maybe." But I was training at a gym here, Band of Barbells, and like Luke Birmingham trains there, and he was just saying like, "Oh man, like I used to suck at bench, but then I just started benching a lot more because I thought, why do I have to accept that I'm bad at bench when I can just work on that and then not be bad at bench?" That was basically he said it a little bit more smart. Sometimes he doesn't seem the most smart, but with his
Well,
whole red
so much
crayon
of it is
thing,
like,
but
what is your expectation for any one session too? Like, oh, I haven't, I'm just gonna go bench 315 this session and be good. It's like, no, it's like,
yeah.
you know what really helped me to realize like, oh, you're actually not a bad squatter. You just like get to the same threshold and you're like, oh, it got hard. And it's like that's when you have to start to manipulate the variables and work through that plateau, right? It's the same thing with bench, right? But it's dude, the human mind and the narrative and the associations that we create are so powerful. Like, I used to like, I've probably really believed in like visualization for a long time, but I haven't practiced it well. And then I just have started to really realize like people who are really good at stuff, they don't even realize that they're visualizing themselves doing it well. They just kind of are, and then they go do the task. And so they don't necessarily verbalize like, yeah, like I'm visualizing myself like moving it well and doing that before I do it. They just kind of explain in words like how to do the thing. But like there's a reason like Michael Phelps visualized every race over and over again, how it was gonna go, even if there was problems. Like Kobe Bryant visualized like making shots, visualized and not just like I'm gonna be on the Lakers, like that's cool too, but like literally like situational skill-oriented performance. And because it's not going to make you lift the weight heavier, right? I mean, it's not gonna like do the work for you, but it literally is ingraining like the belief that you can do it so that you create a different prediction with your body and with your brain, right? Because this is my biggest like thing that I've really learned this past like 6 months. I've known this, but like I've really put it into practice. Your brain is just predicting the future based on the past. So if you've always struggled with 225 and you say, I'm going to struggle with 225, maybe not explicitly, you're going to struggle with 225. But if you start to say, well, okay, I've built up the capacity to potentially do 225 better. Now I have to go do 225 better. Like you're going to perform better. And because you're predicting a different outcome. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that makes tons of sense. Like you're going into it with a totally different mindset, totally different intent.
Yeah.
And like that actual, like probably from a physiological standpoint too, you know, how your brain is actually like producing those signals, and like the
Yes.
environment of your body is going to be different when you're going into it with those different expectations, probably a lot more positive too, and a lot like looking forward to it instead of, you know, being down and drained and like, oh, this is going to go bad. So you're going to have probably from that standpoint just better performance. And then also I think just like the change in mindset of it changes how you approach each session too, leading up to everything. And it's like instead of, you know, reaching that threshold and be like, oh, it's hard, and overshooting all the time and just being, well, I suck, and skipping sets, it's like, well, you know what, I'm working on this. So you put in that intent in every rep, you work
Yeah.
appropriately, and then you actually do everything. So you have a lot more consistent, good work built up that, you know, you've put in the work to actually perform on that. Because sometimes, you know, you just got to be real with yourself and be like, yeah, my bench sucks because I don't put in the work for it. I am
Because
actually
I
just
kind of
not
suck
good
at
enough and I'm
benching.
not strong enough to do it. And that
Yeah.
is why I can't do it. It's like what Austin Yoakam always says with his athletes. It's like, you know, they're nervous. Like sometimes athletes are nervous because it's right, because they suck, because they
Yeah.
haven't put in the time, because they know they can't actually perform at that level because they haven't put in the practice to perform at that level. It's the same thing with anything you're limited at. You know, if you're limited, put in that practice, put in that time, actually get yourself up to the point to perform there instead of just thinking, okay, you know what? I wasn't able to perform there last time. I'm just going to try it, and having that belief that you're not going to perform there, but still trying it. Find the appropriate entry point, work appropriately for long enough, and you will get to that point.
Yeah.
So I think changing that mindset on it of being like, you know what, looking forward to it, instead of saying like, oh, I can't do this, I'm bad, like I can do this, I just need to put in the time, changes not just the performance on that day, but everything leading up to it.
Saying you suck at something with and feeling bad about it is completely different than saying I suck at something and I want to get better at it, right? It's totally like same general like what you're telling yourself, but totally different things are going to happen based on those two things, right? And like yeah, it's just dude, just you, like there's no reason I can't get better, right? The reason that I haven't gotten better is because of myself, right? And because I have just like either half-assed it or I've shied away from it or I've been like I haven't accepted that like yeah, you know, honestly, it's not crazy complicated. Like if you can do 225 for 4, okay, go see if you can do 225 for 5 in a week or two, right? Or if you can, you know, like, or just even just, I think this, it's like, yeah, okay, so if you did one, you did 205 for 8, okay, and you did 225 for 4, okay, like, okay, see if you can get 205 to 10 in the next couple weeks. That's probably and at around the same intensity, right? Or the same RPE type of thing. Okay, you've probably gotten a little bit stronger. Okay, do the same thing with 225. It's like, we make it like, oh, there's this stepwise linear process. And it's like, no, just like manipulate the variables and try to put more weight on the bar, right? It's like, and that doesn't mean that like me as a coach, I'm not providing utility as like prescribing stuff. But most of it, I'm just learning more and more is like positive reinforcement of what's going bad and like challenging people to think about it differently. Because this is the also thing. It's like, hey, if you can do, you know, if you can do 395 for a deadlift, like you can't tell me that you don't have the capacity to turn on a little bit more muscle, like, you know, and to do 405. Like it's in there somewhere, right? Like to figuring it out is like, what is that a product of? Is it maybe like the perfect 4 week buildup? Maybe. Or it's maybe that you've just built the confidence and like the mindset to be like, I'm gonna go fucking try this. I'm gonna give it my best effort. And if I fail, I fail. But what did I learn? Right? That's also a huge piece of it.
Yeah, like why did you fail? Was it like, oh, you know, strength, you just straight up don't have the strength? It was like, oh, you know what, you're off a little bit. Exactly, like look at those failures as learning opportunities, and like don't let them get you down. Look at them as like, okay, well, now that's my new goal. That's okay, I failed, whatever, that happens. Now I can work towards it to overcome it. Why did I fail? Oh, I wasn't quite strong enough. Okay, I'm gonna just get stronger. Why'd I fail? Oh, I just got way too hyped up and just kind of like completely changed how I pulled that. Well, I'm gonna go over it in my head again and again now, pulling 405 the way I usually pull, or the way I pulled 395. And then next time you revisit it, you're not gonna be so nervous, and you're gonna be able to kind of keep everything how you normally do and pull it with a lot more confidence and probably get it. One thing, I can't remember what you said in your rant, but this just popped into my head. So it's going to kind of be a random, I want to say this thing. But yeah, people need to understand that they're in control of a lot more than they think they are. Like a lot of people think, oh, I can't do this, and it's just me. It's not something I can do. It's just whatever. But you know, you're in control of a lot more. Like, bring that locus of control inside. Understand you can change anything. You can put in work. You can overcome pretty much everything. And you're in control of a lot. Like, maybe not the big picture of that one thing, but every little piece of it, you probably have some control over. And if you manipulate things enough and like make changes to enough things, then that is going to change the big thing. So, in some way, you're in control of everything.
It's that's the weird part about like we are constantly bombarded with like systemic and societal influences that like have big effects. But you also, and everybody's like, there are people who like have been in, put in a life in a really shitty situation, right? This is gonna bring me like we, I don't want to take all your time, and I gotta take my dog for a walk, but like the taking control of what you can control and then realizing that ultimately then you can control a little bit more. Like honestly, like the past few days, even kind of the past few weeks, I've just been kind of like I don't think that like discipline is like the most important thing also. I think there's a lot of successful people out there who aren't like the most disciplined people, but I know when I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, my day goes better because I like get a read and I get to do a few things that just make me feel good before like my wife gets up and my kid gets up. And this morning at 6 a.m. I like got up, I took my dog on a walk, and I read for like the rest of, until 7 o'clock. And it, like, did it change my life? No. It didn't do anything amazing, but it did feel good. And like I took control of that. And then it's like, okay, like the rest of the day, I'm kind of setting this tone for myself, right?
Yeah,
All
and
right.
over the long period, like, you're getting those habits in, you're getting your steps in every day
Yeah.
and having that walking habit, you're getting some kind of success at the start of your day, which has a really big mental impact. And like you said,
Yes, it
sets the
does.
tone for the day. And you're gonna be reading more and more. And it's a nice calm way to learn. And especially in the morning, your head's a little bit more empty maybe. So it's like, well, you can actually absorb and you can to understand too, just to kind of bring it back to
Yes.
that, and probably absorb more. So it's like those repeated effects of like, oh, actually, you know what? I'm getting all of this from this little task that I have control over, which now arms you with more ability to make changes in other things too. And to kind of touch back on that, like, people are born at rough circumstances and their social situations, economic situations, and everything. They still have control to an extent. The way I kind of like to look at it is like it's probably just a different scale. Someone who's born privileged and has the privilege of their parents being able to support them and maybe some help with paying for school and always having that security of something to fall back on if something goes wrong. Their scale is probably like here. They're starting from here and they can kind of get up to here. Someone who's born to a single parent in a poor economic situation in a bad neighborhood, and they're still doing their best. Their scale might be shifted down a little bit, but it's like they can still kind of control somewhat. It's just changing those expectations of like, okay, what can realistically like happen? It's like, yeah, you're in control of more than you think. You might not be as in control of everything as, someone like me or you, or someone who's born in a less privileged position, but you can still make some changes. And then as care providers providing care to those people, it's like understand that too and have that empathy and don't put the expectations of what you can do onto them, right? Try to see from their perspective, listen to them, learn from them, understand their situation as best as possible and understand kind of like their scale as best as possible too. And it's like, okay, how do I empower this person to take power over at least some things in their life to make it improved? You're not looking to have this always like perfect life situation for everyone, but just like, you just want that person to improve their life a little bit and help them kind of have that meaning and improvement for themselves.
Yeah.
That was a
I
little bit of
mean,
a tangent, but
dude, well, people with trust funds still have problems, and a lot of times it's because they have the trust fund that they have problems,
yeah.
right? Like, and it, yeah, like, I think the idea, like, not the idea, but like equity of opportunity, right? Like, or quality of opportunity, equity of opportunity. Like, people still have to choose. You still have to take action, and you still have to, and that's where I think that, that idea of like, what we need to help people do is make better predictions or open up the possibilities to what they can achieve if they, learn, right? Like that's really how I view training, and this is where I this is a good segue. Training and rehab is just me trying to create different opportunities for people to learn about their body so that the way they associated like, oh, that causes pain, to, oh, I can do that and it doesn't cause pain. Like that's just you learned. You got stronger, but you also associated like differently, right? Last question. Why do we pick up heavy objects? What's this all about, Kevin?
Improvement, challenging yourself and proving. I like to prove to myself that I can do things that I used to think weren't possible. So like when I started lifting, I was like, you know what? Like, how am I ever gonna squat over 200 pounds? How am I gonna ever deadlift over 200 pounds? And then, you know, I did. And then it was like the next one. It's like, okay, well, how am I ever gonna do 300 plates? Like when I got into university, I was like, got to a 295 deadlift, like right when I started. And now there's kids lifting that at like 12. But it's like, okay, I got to that and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's like, I want to get to 315. I don't know how I would be able to get to 315. And it's like, you see people lifting 405, and I'm like, I don't know if I could ever do that. But, you know, I kind of understand, you know, if I put in the time, I can achieve it. And lifting that heavy thing is kind of that great metaphor for life of, you know, you're going to do something hard and it's going to improve. And in order to do that hard thing, you need to put in the time before. Problem solve, right? Find your entry point, break things down, build them up until you achieve that goal. And that's kind of why I lift heavy things, is just all
I love it, dude.
that.
I love it. I'm with you. Keep lifting
Yeah.
the heavy things. Stop being glass backs out there, people. There's better ways. You're more capable than you know. Kevin, where can people find you?
KH Movement on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, although I'm less like active on TikTok, so Instagram and YouTube is probably the best place to find me. Yeah,
Appreciate
just
you,
search
man.
KH Movement, and you know, if you want to make sure you find me, put in Zercher after, because you might get some Kingdom Hearts stuff. I realized, but
That's
too
all
late.
right. That's a good game. It's been a long time since I played that game. Like a di is it like a it's like Mickey Mouse doing stuff? What's that game about?
It's Disney.
Hey, dude,
Yeah,
appreciate
the
your
first time I
time.
Googled my own name, I was like, oh, whoops.
No, dude, I appreciate your time. This was a great talk. We'll do it again in the future, man. Have a great Tuesday.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was tons of fun.
See you,
Have a good
buddy.
one.
Peace.